Let's do it. I'm ready.
Hello. You're listening to Circus Stories, a circus history podcast. I'm your host, Callie B., and I'll be telling you another thrilling story from circus history. But first, let me introduce my enthusiastic co-host, Mark.
Hello, it's me. I'm very enthusiastic today.
Yeah, I love it. Are you ready for another cool circus history story,
Mark? So ready. What are we talking about today?
Oh, it's going to knock your socks off.
Ooh, I hate my socks. Good.
You need those socks.
I do like them sometimes, but never to bed.
Oh, God, socks to bed. Gross.
Too hot. I need my toes free. They need to breathe.
They do need to breathe. Do you sleep with your feet tucked in? How do you do that? Are you tucking in?
You know, in my preferred scenario, if I'm getting my perfect sleep scenario going, it's very cold and very dark and I'm bundled the heck up.
Like a bear.
Huh. Exactly. Like a bear in hibernation. But this GD Los Angeles sun is so hot. And like a lot of the times at night, while I still like to be covered, like to get an actual cold feeling, sometimes I will stick my tootsies out, especially because the way my little AC unit in my window is, it's like if I stick my tootsies out, it'll blow right on them. So if it's a very hot day, I will put my big comforter over me, but stick the toes out. But in a perfect world, toes in.
Toes in. I like it. Toes
it's a compromise in. I have to make because of the stupid desert we live in.
Is it? That damn LA desert. So I'm going to first start with our circus word, or in today's case, phrase of the day. Oh. So if I hollered out, "Hey, Rube," to you, Mark, what do you think that would mean?
I feel like it's a diss of some sort. Like you're calling me like a schmuck, basically.
Well, that's close. So if it's yelled out at the circus, usually it's like a battle cry for circus people in fights with townspeople.
Oh.
So it's like if a circus person yells, "Hey, Rube," it's like, "Hey, I need backup because we're in a fight."
Interesting.
And there's a funny story about this.
Yeah, I was going to ask, why Rube?
I'm not sure the origin, because I think Rube means like you fool. You're being a fool.
That's why, right? I thought it was kind of like a diss of some sort.
Yeah, that makes sense. So maybe it's like, "Hey, there's a dummy over here."
So like, "Hey, some fool is starting trouble in our..."
So yeah. Let's fucking kick his ass, I guess. I don't know. But when my parents were at Circus Vargas and my parents were working concessions, my mom would work in the summers. She would do snow cones and she would like stack them up super high and then give them to my dad and he would take them out. So she has like an ice pick and they're at some town and I cannot recall which one, but this young kid comes up to her and he's like 9 and he's like, "Give me something." She's like, "No."
Uh-oh.
And he's like, "Give me something for free." And she's like, "No, get the fuck out of here." Like,
I hate that.
And I'm like, "Did you really say get the fuck out of here?" She's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "That's okay.
Yeah, get the hell out of here, you scamp."
She's like, "I was like 20, whatever."
Good. Yeah, good. No, that kid needs to be told off. I hate that kid.
He looks at her snow cone ice pick and she sees him look at it. And so they both go for it. And he gets it before her and her hand's down and he stabs her hand with this ice pick.
Wow, what a piece of shit. I hate this kid.
Yeah. And so my dad sees this and he's like runs over and yells at the kid. And then that kid's older brother comes over. And so now my dad and this older brother are yelling. And then this guy starts to get physical with my dad. And my dad yells, "Hey, Rube." And then all these circus dudes come over.
Yeah, hell yeah. Kick that kid out.
Yeah. Meanwhile, my mom was stabbed in the hand with an ice pick by a small child.
Which is insane. I worked as a camp counselor for too many years. And what that'll do to you is remind you that kids when they get to a certain age are most
ruthless.
Of them are pieces of shit. Some are still nice, but some little idiots, they figure out that like, a lot of authority positions can't actually do anything to you. So like, as long as they don't care about being yelled at, they're invincible. And when they figure that out, they become terrible humans.
And almost attempted murderers, it sounds like.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous. Like the worst thing I had to worry about was like a kid just being a smart ass and not doing what I would say. But like stabbing you in the hand, like what the fuck is that?
Yeah, I mean, what a treacherous job.
Because you wouldn't give him a free snow cone. That kid needs to be picked up by the back collar of his shirt and the tail of his pants and tossed out.
And tossed out, yeah, old school style.
Throw him into a big old pile of diapers or something. So somewhere he doesn't get like hurt, but like it sucks to be him.
Or just like a dumpster, right? Just like a big dumpster.
Yeah. Throw him in the dumpster and then a lid slams down and he falls in.
Something with a bunch of banana peels.
You know, a really good like curse to wish on someone that's like not serious, but like uncomfortable. My mom does this in traffic all the time, is she will wish someone gets a pimple on their butt. Because it's just very uncomfortable, and it'll be there for like at least a day.
She's right. She's correct.
It's a good one.
That is a great one.
You got to imagine that maybe once that happened to her, and she's like, "Oh, I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy." And then when the road rage happens, that all changes.
Oh, I like her. I like your mom.
She's
she
great.
Sounds like a good time. She sounds like a great time. All right, so that's a Hey Rube. That's what that comes from. And it works, Rube. Apparently. So if you ever get in a jam at the circus, you know what to yell out.
Okay, that's good to know. That's a good secret weapon. I mean, they're like, what part of the circus do you work in? And I go, whoop, 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 and have to run away.
So today we are going to dive into the amazing and thrilling adventures of Rosa Matilda Richter, better known by her stage name as Zazzle.
Oh, that name sounds familiar.
Zazzle. So Rosa Richter is best known for being the world's first recorded human cannonball.
Oh, hell yeah.
And it was recorded in 1877 when she shot into the air at the Royal Aquarium in London. And she was only 14, and it was recorded by the Guinness Book of World Records.
Could you imagine like being 14 and I don't know if she was like with her parents or whatever, but having them be like, yes, this is her calling, she is the first cannonball, put my 14-year-old daughter in a cannon and shoot her the hell over this whale tank. And you know, most parents would think that's insane, but they were right, and now we are talking about her years later. So
she had quite an impressive circus career, but she did so much more beyond that. Ooh. But we'll get into that. And I'll refer to her as Zazzle throughout the story, but she was born Rosa Matilda Richter in London, England in 1863. She had one older sister, but I couldn't really find much information on her. However, I just know that she had one older sister.
Okay. I hope that she didn't disappear in a freak cannon accident.
So her parents were Ernst and Susanna Richter.
Ernst?
Ernst. Like, I thought it was Ernest, but it's Ernst. So it's like Ernest without the last E.
I wonder if that was a strange, like, or unusual name even back then, or if there was, like, a lot of Ernsts walking around.
So both of her parents were in the circus industry. Her father was a well-known talent agent. Who, beginning in 1848...
Hey, you look weird. You want to be in the circus?
Right? Pretty much. Well, yeah. He supplied for performers from all over, including New Zealanders, Chinese, and Africans. So it says performers. He probably sourced these people, acts from these places, and perhaps they could have been like curiosities, oddities as well.
Yeah.
He also supplied animals, and he's quoted to say, I've supplied animals from the elephant to the ostrich to the white mouse and performing canaries.
To the white mouse? Why is that on his like impressive list?
Performing canaries. I thought that was, I was like, what? All right.
I mean, that's weird too, but like a white mouse, like, so you found an albino mouse. Good for you.
Yeah. Dude. There's a ton of them. I've seen a bunch.
Yeah. I feel like have you ever seen the movie Mouse Hunt? They're all over that. Clearly, they're not that hard to find.
Yeah, man.
But what a weird job. So he's traveling the world finding animals and strange humans.
Yeah.
Like, that really does seem like the villain's job in like a Nickelodeon original movie.
And then Suzanne, her mother, was a dancer in the London Circus. So as a child, she's surrounded by circus and she's taught how to perform, learning tight wire and ballet. It's noted that she would practice in a condemned church in London.
Ooh, that's spooky.
She would practice the tightrope in the chancel area in the church, which is basically the front area where the altar would be and the choir area.
Well, because if she falls, Jesus will catch her.
Exactly. That's exactly what they said, that Jesus would catch her when she fell.
Yeah, I bet.
There would be a net outstretched like far beneath her, and then the tight wire would be high up above.
I mean, that's pretty, you got to have faith in JC. That's pretty, I don't know, quite blasphemous, but definitely not good faith right there.
The imagery is so interesting, though, of like this old London broken down church and then this circus performing family just practicing in this old church. It's very interesting.
I mean, that's great. Like, whoever makes a movie about this, use that shot, because just like a slow pan out of just like revealing where she is and what she's doing there, like, and it's echoing because churches are echoey for prayer reasons.
And like her mom's playing on the organ, like, go, Zazzle, go.
And the freaking sunset is coming through the stained glass. Get out of here.
Get out. We own the rights. Okay, cool. Good.
We own the rights. Hollywood, you come to us.
Yes, we just said it. All right. So she was also taught to fall properly at a very young age, which is really important in circus. And a lot of circus families teach their kids.
It's a very good skill. I remember when I was young, I would do improv like and like acting lessons, and like two of my best friends did it with us. And my friend Pete could pratfall like a champ, and it was like, where did you learn how to do this? He would just like fall, and it looked like he was falling hard, and he would just bounce up like it was nothing always. And maybe he was, and he was just so committed to the bit that he was okay with it. I don't know.
Did you ever go to like a clown college?
No. No, we did this when we were like, I think it was like still grade school or something. Like, we were very young.
Oh, wow.
We were doing these acting lessons. So like I think he just figured it out once and just kept doing it. Or he just knew it was making us laugh and he just kept doing it. It's hard to say.
And he's like, my body is falling apart, guys.
He's like, oh, whatever. Bruises.
Jesus, criminy. Think about how resilient you were as a kid, though, because she's like five and she's, you know.
Well, yeah, your bones are made of rubber back then.
That's exactly what it is.
But I would be too scared. I was always so scared of getting hurt. I was like, I'm not going to fall. That would hurt.
I know. Falling is ouchy.
Ouchy. I'll make a silly joke instead.
Exactly. And that's why we are the way we are, man. Mm-hmm. So she was taught how to fall properly at a young age. And like I said, a lot of circus families do that, and they'll also like balance their kids on their hand when they're like one, and just that's,
I mean, classic.
That's how they do it. They teach their kids the basics of tumbling when they're like two.
Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting thing to be so ingrained at you in like such a young age. Like the idea that your balance is going to be that good that early. Like, I can't imagine that that's not just like very beneficial for you for the rest of life.
So what does it mean to fall properly? Basically, you have to practice like the safe and most effective way to fall into a net in her case, which sounds like an easy task, but it's more complicated. We realize that the net itself, those nets that they fall into are really dangerous because it's strung so taut. So when you hit it, you bounce out maybe sometimes, or so you have to like be prepared to bounce. You have to be prepared to bounce correctly.
And it's interesting because I imagine a net is so different from like falling properly on the ground.
Yes, because
I think with the ground, like, you're supposed to like roll to like keep momentum so it doesn't all just go straight into your body. But like if you're like hitting into that and bouncing, like that's got to be completely different. Do you know how you do it? Do you just like splay out like super wide like a starfish?
One, you want to fall like on your like back or your butt, you know, so you don't want to fall on your face and you don't want to like fall forward. But also like don't brace. You have to basically be pretty loose and like ready to bounce, but not bounce out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's a whole like tutorial of how to do it properly, but I'm not sure exactly.
The looseness thing is so crazy because I have heard that about like in general, just like falling, like the more tense you make your body, the more likely you are to like break something. Like I've heard this story, and it's one that like, it's one of these stories that like I keep with me as like a fun little like anecdote, but like I've said it so many times that I honestly don't even know if it's true anymore. But I heard this story about a guy who was drunk. And he fell out of like a window. It was and something like crazy, like three stories or something like that or more.
Oh,
it was
wow.
like a really hard fall. And he fell out. And because he was so like loose, basically, he got like hurt, but he didn't break anything. Like he just got like really bruised up.
And that's what people say is like, if you brace yourself when you're in a car accident, it's like worse, right? You're supposed to like go limp because your body will just move
better.
So
your body can like rubber band a little bit instead of being like, it's like the thing of like, if you hit a pencil really hard because it's tough, it'll snap. If you hit a rubber band really hard, it'll just wiggle.
That's right. So be a rubber band in the net when you fall.
Be a rubber band, ladies and gentlemen. No pencils out there.
So by age five, Zazzle began performing. She was cast as...
At age five?
I know.
That's crazy.
She was cast as one of Cinderella's stepsisters in a pantomime performance at a Raglan music hall when she was doing ballet.
Okay.
She was really just filling in for a child that had gotten sick, had fallen ill. But because she was a crowd favorite, she subsequently became contracted for a number of seasons at the Drury Lane Theatre. It's a West End theatre in Covent Garden, London.
So she was one of the first child stars.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they had she was a child star. Yes, indeed. She received gymnastic lessons from a well-known gymnast. Also, these two brothers, the Levante brothers, who also helped her refine her acrobatic and trapeze skills.
I'm really picturing two guys who look identical with mustache and tracksuits. And just like, and they just keep going like, hip, hop, hip, hop, and have her just like do constant calisthenics.
Right.
Hop, hop, hey, hop. I mean, it gets me jazzed up to hear a hop, hop.
I want a hop, hop. And then a hooray. Yeah.
Come, guys, give us a hop, hop. If you like this episode, give us a hop, hop in the comments.
Well, yeah. And we'll know what you mean, please. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So by age 11, she was performing with a gentleman, Monsieur Geary. He was a well-known performer. She started performing a move that was called Leap for Life, where she would
literally leap for her life.
She would get to like the top of the arch. So like, have you been to the Orpheum before, Mark? The Orpheum Theater?
I think I've heard of it.
Or a big theater like with an orchestra pit has like there's the stage and then okay. There's like the archways that frame the stage.
Yes.
The top one is called the
The Procentiarum, yes, of course.
Is that the Procentium?
No, I'm making things up. I don't know.
So it's like the very tip top of the arch and frames the stage, and it's like a half circle arch.
Is that named after like a flower? That sounds like a flower to me. Like prosentiums or something.
Did it sound beautiful when I said it?
Flower people, sound off in the comments and let us know if that's a flower. Okay, theaters, archways.
So she would get up to the top of the archway and she would leap down 90 feet.
Jesus.
Into a net below. So she would go up there. There was like a platform and then she would just like swan dive down to this thing.
And 90 feet is crazy. Like I went to college at Ithaca College and there's these like natural gorges, and like there's a big thing is like jumping off the gorge into the lake below. It was just like a thing a lot of kids did.
That's terrifying.
And so I did it a couple of times at varying heights. Okay, the highest I've ever done is 60 feet, and oh my god, when you jump from 60 feet you are falling so much longer than you think you're gonna be falling for. It is multiple seconds in the air. Ooh. And it is a very strange sensation. It's one of the things that like the more I did it, the more scared of it I got, as like my brain kind of realized like, oh, this is like,
oh god, that's so scary.
I mean, you also have to learn how to like hit the water, because the first few times I did it I really slapped my little butt on the water, and you gotta learn that, like, because you try to pencil right away because you're like, I know that I have to sharply go
break
in.
Break the water.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you pencil right away, wind catches under your leggies and butt and pushes it up into a little more of a seated position, and it slaps the back of your chaps.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you got to flail like an idiot for like the first like 1.5 seconds. And then at the last minute, you pencil up, and then you don't really hurt yourself.
Yikes.
Some people would do it with shoes, too. So that you wouldn't hurt your feet. But there was a jump that was like 80 feet, which I was like, no way in hell. And then there was another one where it was the same 80 footer, but it was at the edge of like it looked kind of like a dam, but it wasn't a dam because water just went over it. So it was like kind of like almost like a man-made, very gentle, small waterfall. I guess it was kind of like a part of a ravine. It doesn't matter. Basically, down this, you could add an extra 40 feet to make it 120 foot if you tried to jump over it. But then you had to clear.
Oh, my God. Were people jumping off that?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the crazy, like, chunky frat bros would every now and then do it. And
the extreme beer crushers.
Well, absolutely. Those kind of guys that smash a can on their forehead.
Yeah,
sure. But there was a time when all this was not allowed because it's very unsafe. And so, like, a ranger came by and was basically just like, everyone has to leave, blah, blah, blah. And then people were just like, oh, man, in unison, of course. And
oh,
then
you don't want us to die here? What?
Yeah, come on, you stupid adult. We're all a little drunk, and this is fine.
Yeah, we're all diving off cliffs hammered. Why do you want us to go?
Into ice cold water, which I found out that as soon as you drop into ice cold water, it drains a lot of your strength immediately. It really zaps you.
And they're swimming with shoes on? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so then this, you know, the ranger comes, tells us to leave. 3 seconds later, this really, this chunkster just yells, "Buzzkill!" and jumps off the 120-foot one. And the terrifying thing about that, as for us as an audience, is we don't see over the lip of the thing. So we have to wait until we hear splashing water to know he's not dead.
My God. Yeah. So you're just waiting for an audible
You're like,
splash,
I want to hear a splash
splat.
Instead of a crunch and a scream. And there was a splash and everyone cheered.
Jeez Louise. That's so scary.
It is a moment. Yeah. Every time that someone would jump over that, which is rare, there is that bit of like, are they dead? All right, I heard a splash. They're okay.
So that's what these performances are at the circus, is basically like, are they going to die? Every single time.
Yeah, that's the draw, really. Come see if someone dies or not.
Yeah, pretty much. So, and when she did the leap for life,
how old is she now?
11. She's 11 when she starts doing these.
That's so crazy.
But she would start like at a low platform height and eventually raise it up. So she'd be like at 30 feet and then at 50 feet and then get super, super high till she was at the very top of the proscenium. Arch.
I mean, you gotta stretch this act out. If you start at 90 feet, that act's over in 3 seconds.
So then she starts performing trapeze. Yeah, her first stint as a trapeze artist was at the Garrick Theater in Whitechapel, where she proved to be a hit, and she starts to perform under the name Le Petite Lulu.
Translation, the little Lulu.
She's engaged by a Siamese troupe of acrobats and appears in Dublin, Marseille. And then they go to Marseille and Toulouse. In Toulouse, she falls during a performance.
Uh-oh.
And is seriously injured.
How serious are we talking?
Well, she's injured, but she doesn't break any bones.
So she gets a big ouch, but no crunch.
Right. She falls during just an acrobatic performance. So, and when she's with the Siamese troupe, that she's doing acrobatics because she's a gymnast. So I'm not sure what acrobats she was doing, or she could have fallen when she's doing trapeze, but it doesn't specify how she was injured, what performance she was doing when she was injured.
And when she's injured, this is still when she's like 11 or close to that?
She's like 11 or 12, yeah. And she's traveling like all over the place with this troupe of acrobats. So she has this fall in Toulouse, and her father insists, despite the fact that he's a talent agent, he's just like, she's got to come back to London, and he doesn't want her to perform anymore.
Good, you know, good for him. All these like, you know, producer types are always like, nah, put her in the cast and get her back on the cannon. Like, you know, it's nice that he's actually like, no, she's very hurt. She should come home and rest for a bit, you know?
Yeah. He's like, I don't want her performing like this anymore.
That is refreshing. And the fact that that's refreshing is a little sad.
Isn't it? She's 12 and she's traveling the world and she falls. Yeah. She should come home, which is a natural reaction.
Let her rest for half a year and then she can go whatever she needs. I don't know how bad she's hurt, but and then she can go back, you know, like she's fucking 12.
At this point, Zazzle's parents, Suzanne and Ernst, are no longer getting along. So they've separated.
Oh, man.
So she starts to, Zazzle starts to live with her mother, and Ernst begins to live on his own. And Zazzle's safety becomes a point of contention between the parents.
Interesting.
Ernst begins to plead that his daughter needs to veer away from these more dangerous acts.
Yeah, that means.
But Suzanne has no issue with her performing.
Well, Suzanne's a performer herself, right?
Exactly. That's part of it. She's supportive of the lifestyle.
Yeah.
So, because she's a performer, she's lived this life. So she probably is like, this is part of it. You hurt yourself. This is part of the art.
And that's such a tricky thing, because like, obviously it makes sense for a parent to be concerned about the safety of their child. And especially from like the dad's standpoint of like not being a performer and like, He only ever sees it happen. It's never happened to him. Mm-hmm. But then there's the other side of it where it's like the mom's like, clearly she's kind of a prodigy. Like we've had her like she has like a glorious trajectory out of all this. And like if you were to stop it, yeah, maybe she'd be safer. But then it's like you have to get a different job and do a different thing. And it's like this is all and like start over in a way. And it's like there's an interesting like train of thought or just like thought experiment of like safety versus an exciting and enjoyable life, and like what is more important. It's like, I mean, the dumb answer is it's all a balance, but like it is interesting to think about at what points like it's worth it and what points it isn't, and how you come
of course, because she is naturally physically talented, you know, and skilled. So And she enjoys it. Zazzle, she, I mean, she enjoys it as well, you know? So she's...
That's another thing. So, like, yeah, like, what are you going to... Also, like, of all the things to do and then try to have a regular life after that, mm-hmm. fucking being an expert trapeze artist at 12 and then trying to work in a fucking office, like, get out of here. How do you make that transition?
And it's, like, the 1800s, so she's going to be, like, a secretary or, like, I don't know, make hats.
Yeah,
so
in some hot building or some dumb thing.
Yeah, she's going to work at a factory and, like, get weird poisoning from sticking her tongue on some pen and I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, back when ballpoint pens were a thing, everyone had to test it by licking the end and passing it
out. I don't know. They'll get some fucked up thing happens in factories. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Fingies get crushed.
And, you know, all the jobs are shitty for women. Mm-hmm. So Zazzle's, she's about 13. She continues with the few more engagements in Hamburg and a few other cities because she's living with her mom. And so she's kind of in charge of where she's going and where she's working. And, mm-hmm. and Zazzle's into it. So the two of them are just like, well, let's keep going. All right. And
yeah, why not?
So it's here that Zazzle meets a man calling himself Lorenz.
Calling himself Lorenz. That's suspicious.
Yes. So he wishes to contract young Rosa Richter, who's not yet going by Zazzle, for a new act and start to have her apprentice under him to fine tune this particular new and exciting act.
Oh, I have a feeling I know what this is going to be.
So both her skill set and her stature, her small stature, are mm-hmm. ideal for his new performance act. Ernst learns of this potential contract from his wife and is told that this man named Lorenz is negotiating the deal for Rosa Richter to work with him, presumably just for singing and dancing.
Big ol' lie.
Yeah. So Ernst hears the name Lorenz and assumes it's a friend of his that he knows, Mr. Lorenz Stolberg, mm-hmm. someone that he is, you know, acquainted with and he trusts enough. So that paired with the fact that Rosa is scheduled to just be singing and dancing, Ernst agrees to sign the agreement.
Okay.
So along with his now separated wife, Suzanne, both of them sign this agreement. Zazzle seals the Lorenz deal with the help of her parents and is taken under the wing of this talent agent.
So there's a talent agent. He's the one who describes it as it's just going to be song and dance.
Right. And okay. That's what the agreement says. Or like it's under the guise of mm-hmm. that. And that's... Ernst says that his wife had told him this is like,
yeah, but she was told by the dude. So the dude is the one who's gotta be lying about that.
Yeah. I think they're both kind of fibbing
yeah. Like maybe the mom kind of knows something else is up, but she's like, we're not going to tell the dad cause he's a sourpuss.
Yeah, exactly. Zazzle goes to live with this guy, Lorenz, at first to start the apprenticeship. And then the mother, Susanna, goes to join her soon after. So now Zazzle's living with her mom, but still apprenticing under this guy.
At least that's good. At least the mom is there to make sure that he's not putting her in a cannon.
So plot twist, actually, Zazzle is learning this new dangerous daredevil act.
Of course she is.
Not singing and dancing at all, obviously. So Lorenz is actually William Hunt.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, a.k.a. the Great Farini. And he's the inventor of the projectile that would quickly evolve into the human cannonball act.
Oh, my God.
This motherfucker.
Yep.
Man, what a sneaky sneak. So
I bet you he had a real curly mustache.
He does have a curly mustache.
I knew it.
He fucking... Catherine, you got to show Mark. Catherine, our producer, needs to show Mark this picture, which I put in our Google Drive. Because he's got a curly freaking mustache.
I mean, I'm literally picturing Snidely Whiplash just as soon as she signs the contract going.
It's like Bernanners, how like horrible he looks.
Does he look like Waluigi?
Kind of. Look at his mustache.
Oh my God. It goes so long.
It's so long. And like,
what
spin,
the fuck?
It's like he's spinning it. Like all that's all he does is spin it.
Yeah, you guys spend so much time.
It's just like
it's
like stops at like halfway through his lips, and then it just spins like past it, like an inch past his ears.
It is truly absurd how long it is. That's wild. You know, I bet you with his spinny mustache, like whenever he got upset, it would untwirl and it would just spiral out. as fume would come out his ears.
And you'd get mad and it would pop mm-hmm. and just like a cigar in a cartoon. Thank you, Catherine.
That's
I
great.
I appreciate that.
That is insane.
Oh, man.
That mustache is fucking ridiculous.
The twisting on it is just
it's so long. It's like a full inch outside of his cheeks on both sides. Why did they trust this man?
It's bananas how long it is. It's like 2 inches.
Yeah.
I mean, who would... How could you... What? I don't understand.
Oh, my God. Of course, he built an experimental cannon that he wanted to put a child in.
So, what a rascal, this guy.
What else would he possibly do with his life?
Of course. So, he shapes Rosa Richter into the great Zazzle, at least on paper. But let's face it, she has all the talent to perform mm-hmm. the act, right? He just has the machinery. So, Ernst is furious, but he feels like he has no power to really change things, especially since...
I mean, you signed a contract.
He signed this contract, yeah. And also, he blames his wife a lot for tricking him.
Yeah, they weren't getting along anyway. That seems pretty obvious that would happen.
He agreed to allow this deal, and in theory, he handed over his daughter to Lorenz, a person he thought he knew, though he didn't really check for himself at all.
I mean, he should be mad at the guy, because the guy lied about who he was, lied to the mom, and even though the mom was suspicious, like, it's still the other fucker who's like said it, you know,
right?
Like,
he claims that my wife Susanna deceived me into signing this agreement. That's a quote from him. He mentions in an interview how he and wife Susanna were separated and not on the best of terms. He claimed that his daughter was being paid in just food and clothes at first during her apprenticeship while learning the Human Cannonball Act, and then Susanna was being paid a few pounds every week, which is closer to like $70 a week. And previously when his daughter was performing at the Westminster Aquarium, which is like a theater in London, she would earn their family about £120 a week, which is closer to $3,400.
Oh, wow.
So they're getting...
Jesus, that is a huge disparity.
Yeah, they're getting undercut a lot. William Hunt, who would go by the Great Farini, we'll just reference him as Farini moving forward.
Yeah, little Farini.
So Farini, of course, it's like that mustache. I can't.
And that mustache is, I think the mustache is, his name is Farini and the guy's name is William
Hunt.
That's
insane. So he was the human cannonball inventor,
which
basically.
I'm very eager to hear what the technology on this is, because cannons explode things to shoot them. So want to know how her bones aren't erupting when this thing goes off.
Yeah, I'll tell you all about that cannon. But what had happened is he had seen young Rosa pre-Zazzle perform her leap for life when she would just like bound off the top and just like land into the net.
She was
in
that jump
prior.
Into a net. I forgot about that. Because I kept picturing water because that seemed like the only safe thing to me.
Right. And they did do that. Like they would do high dives with horses and just jump into the water.
With horses? How does the horse land?
Oh, that's a whole other episode. We'll talk about that.
Oh my God. Those poor horses.
I know. So, but in the Leap for Life and Zazzle, she continued to perform this throughout her entire circus career. But she would explain how she performed that act, and it required like simple courage and skill. And in later interviews in life, she would say that the perilous leap was a simple thing requiring only courage, perfect self-control, and a knack of using the muscles of the chest. So it was like an act of flying in which the performer would throw back their head, just one head.
Well, at least some of them.
Expand their chest and then draw their legs in and their feet while they leap and then fall fearlessly, you know, forward and correctly into the net. So they would like leap forward like a swan dive and then tuck their legs in. And then sometimes she would somersault and then they would fall properly into the
net.
So
she would have to like fall on her back with her limbs tucked in so they wouldn't get tangled, kind of a thing. And so she almost makes a cannonball where she lands on her back.
Well,
like
that's the leap for life. And that's what he was seeing when she was like 11 or 12. And he was like, oh, this is perfect. If I integrate my like projectile, she already does this jumping thing.
Yeah,
she knows how to fall.
Well, if only instead of having her jump safely off something, I put her in a tube and lit it on fire.
I'll just shoot her out of something. Yeah. So when he sees her do this when she's like 11 or 12.
He's just in the audience curling that stash, watching it.
It's like a foot long, man. So he sees this as a perfect fit for his burgeoning cannonball act. This is when he first inquired about her talents to her father when she's like 11 or 12. And Ernst declares this is a quote from him. Farini should never have a dog of mine, much less a daughter, for his dangerous performances. So he's like, fuck no, dude. I'm not going to let you use her for your weird performances, you wacko.
So he did the like thing that kids do is like you go to one parent and they say no and you go to the other parent. So Farini just went to the other parent and then he lied about who he was so the dad wouldn't know that he's already said no to this guy.
That's exactly right.
God, the dad must be so furious at this. Like,
so yeah, so it makes sense that Farini tricked Zazzle and his father by just going to the mother.
Yeah.
Because he would have just immediately said no had he asked him again and approached him 2 years later.
Yeah, of course.
He would have been like, fuck no, dude. I already said no to you 2 years ago.
It's also like, this is the kind of guy who he made this canon before he saw her. So before he knew that there was someone who could possibly handle it, he was building a machine to shoot children out of.
So he started this canon. I'll give you some background. He invents the actual projectile in 1871 and he patents it. And so just to make sure, like he's very like, this is mine. Nobody look at it.
This is going to be big, you idiots. No one take this genius idea from me that shoots humans.
It's insane. And he wanted to make sure like everybody throughout his career, he was like, I made this thing. Like every time they're like, they perform, he's like, I made it. This is my invention.
It's just like so proud of it. And it's like makes it so obvious to everyone he talks to that he's an evil villain, that he is a cartoon evil genius.
Yeah. So eventually it progresses into the mortar style cannon with the projectile inside. But initially, so in 1871, he develops this mechanism that he called the projector, which he patented, which is made out of heavy springs and Indian rubber. And it's simply a platform with springs. So it looked nothing like a cannon initially, but when...
So there wasn't a tube first?
Right. There was no tube first. Actually, and someone else patented that whole mechanism with the tube around it. So he... Mm-hmm. He patented the actual spring-loaded platform, but with the mortar around it, someone else patented that whole thing, that whole barrel style.
The spring-loaded aspect of it makes a lot more sense as to why the person's lower body is not just ripped in two as they get projected across the room.
Exactly.
It's got to be so precise, though, because if that goes off and you're in a tube and the angle is wrong, that's just going to crush you against the side of it and break shit anyway. Like... You have to have so much trust in it.
Yeah, they do tests, of course, but, you know, you're also kind of at...
With what? Bags of flour? That, honestly, I'd rather see. Put a bag of flour in there and shoot it at something. It's going to explode. It'll be a lot of fun.
So what happens is the small platform on which the bullet or like the person...
Or the person.
stood was depressed, placing tension on the rubber springs. By trial and error, the amount of tension needed to project an individual of certain weight... to a given distance was determined.
Did that one work? No. Load another seagull in there. We'll try again.
After time went on, like, you know, as human cannonballs and the apparatuses that they were shot out of progressed, they would use human dummies that were the same weight of the person. But there was still accidents. And we'll talk about that.
Those human dummies really got hurt.
We'll talk about that in another episode because there's been big accidents of people when they...
I bet.
Yeah. Because they're just... You know, shit happens.
Because they're launching a person.
Yeah. But they would use like a sand dummy that's the same weight as the performer. And they would test it, you know, depending on the venue. But still, there's stuff that has happened with that.
I mean, that's interesting to see on its own, just to watch a ragdoll fly across the room. Like, and if it explodes, that's great.
So his invention was not described as being... placed in a barrel, but it progressed and he used it during the time of Zazzle. So at that time when she was shooting out of a cannon, the cannon mechanics were available to her. It was like a couple years after that someone was like, let's put it in a barrel. That makes sense. And so he starts using the barrel apparatus in his axe. The so-called cannon is technically not a cannon at all. Gunpowder, commonly found in normal cannons, has historically never been the catalyst for human cannonball acts.
I mean, that's comforting.
But sometimes for dramatic effect, gunpowder or pyrotechnics are used on the outside to give more dramatic effect. And this was used in Zazzle's act for that same thing.
And to trick poor fools like me who think that they're actually shooting people.
They're actually lighting her on fire and shooting her out of there.
How are her ankles not in shards? It's like, yeah, she's got tough ankles. Who knows?
So the boost occurs with compressed air, or less often, bungee cords are used to shoot off the projectile, which But in his case, it was spring. So now more recently, they'll use compressed air.
You got to wonder what son of a bitch with an even longer mustache saw this and then invented the t-shirt cannon.
Oh, he was like, I can shoot anything out of here.
He's like, you're shooting a person, you idiot. I'll shoot goods, general right? things that people want.
Have you heard
buy.
Of spring break? There's so much money to be made.
He's like, everyone loves t-shirts. Okay. Everyone does.
A neon pink with a crocodile on it.
He's in like Shark Tank. He's like, what is the one thing everyone loves? And people are like, pizza, chocolate. And he's like, t-shirts. And you're like, we do all wear shirts. That is,
I mean, I don't know if I love them, but I do have some. Yeah.
No, but if someone gives you a free shirt, you're going to get
That's
excited.
That's true. Anything free, especially a shirt. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
There's so many shirts I have from TV shows or like crew shirts where you're like, I can't
that
get
you only
rid
have
because
it's free. Yeah. Yeah. You're like, there's memories
I like
associated.
It. Oh God. So like any act, secretive performers are often hesitant to reveal the exact science behind their own mechanism. But mm-hmm. the device tends to work more like a catapult. So quite simply, someone crawls into this barrel and compressed air or springs push the platform under them and then force them to, you know, be pushed out. The platform stops at the muzzle of the cannon, but the human inside keeps going high into the air. So the human goes up, they reach a peak, and then they return downward. But they have to be perfectly firm and stiff when they shoot out of that cannon to avoid injury or to lose.
Yeah. I was just thinking that because if your arm or any part of your skin touches the edge of this, what I'm imagining is I don't know what the material it's made out of, but it almost doesn't matter. Like whether it's like some kind of hard concrete thing or whether it's wood or anything, you're going to get ripped up as you get shot out of there.
Yeah, because they shoot them out with like a force, depending on how hard his projector was. But like, you know, later statistics I found on human cannonballs was like the force is like 3,000 to 6,000 pounds per square inch of pressure.
I mean, it's got to be so much because you're literally flinging a human like, you know, all maybe like I don't know how high, but if she's going as high as the jump, it's like almost 100 feet in the air. It's like,
yeah, she's well initially she starts at like 60 feet,
still a lot to like send a human being. I mean, granted, she was probably like, what age is she at this point? Like, is she still like
she's 14?
Yeah, so she might be pretty light at that age, but still.
But she's all, I mean, she's super strong, you know. I mean, she's yeah. probably like, I don't know, 100 and something pounds. So this was the thing. So there's like a crazy G-force that you have to endure. So you have to be super, super stiff.
Yeah.
And you're traveling like super fast. The world record of being shot out of a cannon and the speed is like 74 miles an hour. Granted, that's like quite later in the years. But I mean,
when we have much more advanced cannon technology.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And like,
and goggles for those poor people.
So he makes this projectile. He starts using it. But he's too big to fit inside the projector himself.
Imagine him trying to get in and his big butt can't fit in there. He's like, damn it. I can't fly with the birds.
In 1873, his projector makes its first appearance in America at Niblo's Garden, our favorite Niblo's.
Niblo's Garden. I love that name.
Yep. Yep. So because he's too wide to fit in his projector, he enlists his son-in-law and he dresses him as a woman and gives him the name
sure.
Lulu because his son-in-law was
why
like,
why not?
Yeah. He was small enough to fit in the cannon. And mm-hmm. he was just like, well, we'll make you look like a girl.
People don't want to see a young boy flying out of a cannon, only a young girl.
I think that he had this whole idea of like a woman will jump out of this cannon. It'll be like people will be amazed that it's a
and
woman.
People are like, but why does it have to be a woman? I think the idea that anyone coming out of a cannon, he's like, it's gotta be a woman and a small one at that. And like, it could just be anyone. It's an amazing feat for anyone to do. And he's like, no. You guys don't get my artistic
He's
genius.
Like, you don't understand what I'm trying to do. It's art. Come on.
I'll show you all. I'll dress my son up as a girl and put him in the can. They're like, you don't have to do
He's
that.
Like, it's a commentary on feminism. You don't understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to prove a point here. Women can be fired out of cannons just as well as men. They're like, the fact that anyone can be shot out of a cannon is insane.
It's insane.
He's like, I'll show you idiots. I'll show you all. And you know what?
He did. You're right. He did.
He showed us all.
And also this gentleman, this son-in-law of his, was a trapeze artist. So it was convenient because mm-hmm. he was petite and he could
yeah.
dress up like
and
a woman.
And he knew how to fall, assuming. Yeah.
And he knew how to fall.
And he's like, whatever. Yeah, this is circus stuff. I'll do whatever
yeah,
you want.
Yeah, he was a circus performer already. So mm-hmm. Farini would hold the latch, suspending the spring, and then release it. And then Lulu would be shot 30 feet in the air. And then Lulu would grab trapeze bars that were hanging down from the ceiling and then release and go down.
Oh, my God.
And that was, like, the whole act.
You got to aim that kid, like, good. Or it's just going to fucking miss. Yeah.
Right? To get the bars? Jesus. Totally. So they were, like, a hit. By 1875, Lulu was known as Queen of the Trapezists until... a fall revealed that Lulu was indeed a man dressed in woman's clothing.
Look, the way that he fell, his dick is showing. Yeah, it's all, like, a lie.
That's not a chick. That's not a chick. There's, like, audience members that were like, I was in love with her.
I was in love as she flew through the air, and then she fell and hurt her big dick. And now right? It's all a ruse.
It's all, oh, man, so many broken hearts.
How does you fall that is immediately apparent? It's got to be. So,
her little Lulu wig hat fell off, or her.
He flies through and tumbles, and then the feet go through the handbars, and the dress falls down. Like,
Lulu.
Oh no,
Lulu! How embarrassing!
Oh my God! And you can't just drop, because then you're gonna fall. So you just have to hang there with your ding-a-ling swinging in the wind,
just hanging out.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but no underwear. When you're flying through the air, because you need the smallest amount of wind resistance. You need to be as light as possible.
Well, I know. I was like, what kind of tucking?
Yeah,
I'm not sure what he was wearing.
I don't know.
I'm
especially sure. For like a young kid, like, you could hide that. I don't know. It seems so weird to me that.
I mean, it was a son-in-law, so he was, like, married. He had to be, like, at least 20.
Was? I was imagining it was, like, you know, like, still very, like, young, like, 14, kind of like
Zazzle. No, I mean, but he was still petite enough, but because Farini was, he was an acrobat, but he was older. So at this point in his career, he was too big to fit in that projector. And also, he was probably like, I don't want to try it.
No, I was like, this is very dangerous. I think a small child should do it.
I did invent it, but... yeah, he's like, but also, why don't you try it, son-in-law? So the jig is up with Lulu. We find out Lulu's a man.
The doink is out.
The doink is out. So Farini needs to find a new Lulu, or he needs to rebrand, basically. So it's 1875 around this time, and Zazzle's about 13. So this is about the time where Farini starts barking up her tree again.
He sees her. He's like, she's perfect. She can fit in the cannon. She doesn't have a dick. It's gold.
Yeah. He's checking all the boxes, basically. So Farini needs somebody small. He needs a strong circus performer that could also be boosted out and then catch the trapeze and agree to do these dangerous acts. And also... be cool with no money, apparently.
Yeah, which is insane, because she was making so much outside of it. Like, she didn't need to do
it. Yeah,
this.
On her own.
She clearly just loved the art. She loved the game, you know?
She did love doing it. So this is when he first starts to scout Rosa Richter, a.k.a. Zazzle. But Farini's, you know, immediately shut down at his first attempt. So he keeps at it. And then eventually he swindles Zazzle to become part of his act, despite her better knowing father, who he also swindles, and her mother.
She's a great swindler.
But Rosa Richter, Zazzle, she's the perfect fit.
She doesn't get it until she's in the cannon. She's like, wait a minute. And then, boom.
Right? She's beautiful. She's talented. She can do trapeze. She can do tight wire also, in addition to her fearless performance of the Leap for Life. So after some training and during her apprenticeship, she figures out how to be loaded in, how to go inside the cannon, how to, you know, be stiff when you shot out of the cannon, all the particulars of this newfangled act and machinery to go along with it. And the act's ready to showcase. So with a brand new name, the Human Cannonball Act, and a female named Zazzle, they're ready to release this act. And Farini knows he has a moneymaker on his hands.
Of course.
So on April 10th, 1877, Zazzle, now just 14 years old, appeared before an excited audience at the Royal Aquarium at Westminster in London. She climbed into Farini's apparatus to waves of applause. She was fired out of Farini's spring-style cannon, traveled approximately 20 feet, and landed in a net. Over time, this distance would eventually increase to 60 feet.
Thank God. 20 feet? Pfft, nothing.
Yeah. She just started out, but they loved it. So she developed a routine in which she leapt through the air in a daring aerial dive or eagle swoop.
Ugh, I love an eagle swoop.
She would be shot from the mouth of the cannon to the top height of the pavilion. She leapt head first through the air. at a distance of nearly 100 feet.
Jeepers, creepers.
So I think she would be shot 200 feet and then soar down 100 because the cannon...
Okay, that makes sense.
The cannon was placed higher up in the theater. So because she has that height.
That's also like, if it's ground level, that is an insane amount of force that you have to put into someone's fucking ankles and just like tighten those ankles up. Otherwise, they're breaking. It doesn't matter that there's no gunpowder. It's just so much force.
A witness account says, "We listened to the loud report, which follows its application to the powder. And lo, our vision is startled by the sight of the living mist, we mean missile, flying through space and alighting safe and sound in the huge net spread to receive her. It is Zazzle. There she stands, bowing her acknowledgement of the thunders of applause which greet her. Before the smoke has cleared from the vast mouth of the cannon whence she has come, she has made her way along the net and is found again, bowing and smiling upon the stage, and the spectators, almost bewildered as well as delighted, are turning to each other with astonishment plainly written upon their faces and upon their lips. The query, is it possible?" So people are like loving it. They're like, this is amazing.
Of course.
They are just, they're just blown away.
I mean, that's a freaking show. Watching someone shoot through a tube and do some like some flippies and eagle soaring, like, yeah, I'll pay 25 easy
yeah,
for that.
Yeah. And another paper, this Billboard, which was like a, it's actually like the Billboard magazine, I think now, but it used to be just,
I was gonna joke, it's like the Billboard magazine.
Yeah, but it used to be just like a postings of like shows that were running or like any kind of entertainment that was happening. They wrote that the dive was astounding and that she was wonderfully clever and graceful on the tightrope as well. So her tightrope was like really cool. She would do tricks like running, standing on one foot, putting baskets on her feet, lying down and sitting on the wire, spinning around while holding all these baskets on her knees. Like she was like a G. She would like slide down and like do the splits on the tight wire and then get back up. Like just like fucking hard.
I mean, everyone, America loves the splits.
Yeah, they really do.
Van Damme proved it. Like we love it.
So she did this like cannonball, but then she also did this tight wire. So they were just like, damn, you are badass.
She got it all. She's a one-woman show. Like you start off with the trapeze stuff. She just like ramps it up and you finish off with the cannon. Mm-hmm. You're good to go.
Yeah. So the act continues at the Royal Aquarium and Zazzle continues to perform both her human cannonball.
I like to do it at the aquarium so the fish can see too. The seals are just like...
the aquarium's like a venue, but... She performs her cannonball act, the high dive also, and the tight wire for another 2 years. And they're a hit. So by 1879, advertisements claim that Zazzle had performed her cannonball act over 1,000 times consecutively, and that more than 2 million spectators had seen her flying through the air. So when Farini had her perform in March of 1879, he advertised her act stating that she was a wonder and a marvel and that she would be running upon the thread, like the tight wire, performing mid-air revolutions, diving from the ceiling into the net, and fired from an exploding cannon. So she would dive when she did her high dive. Sometimes she would jump, grab the trapeze, and then dive down from the trapeze as well. So he also noted in his advertisement that the young lady is placed into the muzzle of the cannon and literally fired into space. So he was doing the thing where he was like inflating advertising and just really trying to like puff up her act.
She flies thousands of feet in the air and bursts angelic wings swooping down above the crowd.
Yes, and she's an angel. She will bless your unborn children.
She will spit on the forehead of any unborn child.
Right.
She's like, what? All right, I mean, I want to see that.
So her act brings in 120 to 200 pounds a week, which is like...
Ooh, give me those pounds.
Almost like $5,000. You know, it's like $3,500 to $5,000 a week. She's performing to crowds of over 15,000 twice a day at the Westminster Aquarium.
And I mean, she's doing this like this often and she's not getting hurt. Like, that's pretty crazy.
So I'll tell you, he continues to manage Zazzle. He promotes her heavily as the amazing and perilous Zazzle act. And he also continues to take the profits from the exhibition and pay Zazzle or her mother, Susanna, just like a couple pounds a week.
Which is insane.
Yeah, like it's a fraction of the profits because together he's making close to like 200 pounds a week, which is like $5,000. It's insane.
Yeah.
So she would continue to live with her mother despite this wage discrepancy, and her mom is still supportive of her and she's under contract. So she really did enjoy performing
Yeah, and so she kind of is like, as long as I get food and have a house, like, I you know, I
yeah, don't she was like content with it, and she's like 15, you know, so
yeah, she's as long about as she doesn't like at this point destroy her body, she's got a great career at her.
Yeah, she's 16 and she's like making a living, which yeah. is hard in general at that time.
Oh yeah, making a living's hard as an adult.
Yeah, like, yeah. So she's just like, okay, I'm happy. I love what I do, and mm-hmm. I'm getting paid for it. So fine. It's fine.
Yeah, that's the dream.
But he's just really ripping her off. So mm-hmm. in 1879, a reporter observed that when traveling to different venues, she did so with a normal train ticket, whereas like other performers would travel with a first class train ticket.
In first class chooch tick. Yeah.
Yeah. This reporter says it might have been supposed that those who derive rich benefits from the clever but dangerous performances would have paid for her the very small differences between a first and second class ticket.
You'd think.
Yeah.
Or you'd hope.
He was just like, what? You would think.
He's like, no, I could save that. Look, if I buy her the first class ticket, yeah, I could do that. But I could also buy her a second class ticket and have enough for a dolphin at the end of the year. So
yeah,
I'm going to get the rare fish.
Right. That's exactly what we're saving for, dolphins.
We want dolphins for the show. No, they're smart and I want to talk to them.
So Ernst felt like his hands were tied and he worried often just about the safety of his daughter constantly.
Makes sense. I would.
Some suspected that Ernst wanted to exhibit Zazzle himself, being a talent agent and all. But at that point, he had left the entertainment biz mm-hmm. and he went to like a 9-to-5 job and he was working as an employed engineer, just like a normal factory job.
Huh. So yeah, he got out of it. He was like, I've had enough of this this crazy rat race.
Yeah, I think that when they separated him and Susanna, his wife, he was just like, I'm just gonna get a normal job. I'm not immersed in the circus biz anymore.
Well, and he clearly wasn't like what's the word I'm looking for? He wasn't like, I was gonna say like cruel enough for yeah. it, like, you know, because yeah. like when she got hurt, he was like, oh, we have to have her stop, you know, like, and if you want to stay in that business, I guess you have to be like, let's figure out what she can still do and we're gonna have her do it, you know what I mean? Like,
right. So that same year, while in Portsmouth, Zazzle suffers an accident when she falls while landing her cannon act. So the net was rotting underneath. And so when she fell, the impact didn't hold her up. So the net was just crumbling when she fell. And she didn't break any bones, mm-hmm. but she was too injured to perform the next day. So like your friend in elementary school.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't break anything.
Yeah. Or like the legendary drunk man who fell off the building. She didn't break any bones.
Yeah, exactly. Like that guy. He was fine and bruised up, but like.
Yeah, it sucked, but no broken bones. Which is crazy because at this point, I assume she's going like 100 feet in the air, you know?
Yeah, she's just soaring and falling into a net and that's supposed to catch her. And nothing.
And yeah, I'm sure that net like slowed the fall a little.
But it just like it disintegrated pretty much. Like it was just not.
That's insane.
Up to snuff, basically.
Yeah. I mean, that just probably goes to show what a good performer she was to know how to handle that kind of scenario.
Well, yeah. Like, and how to, she was falling properly enough. Yeah. And, like was so loose, which is so crazy to be shot out of cannon and be so stiff and then have to loosen up in the
in
air
seconds.
And also look for your target. Because you're shot out of this thing, you have to find the target, ultimately. You have yeah. to find the net, mm-hmm. because it is a big theater that you're in.
Meanwhile, wind is rushing through your face and just trying to open it. Have you ever tried to stick your head out a window of a moving car and open your eyes?
And open your eyes,
like,
yeah.
It's impossible. And she was doing that to know where to land. And then, like, yeah, you need so much, like, not only just, like, mental awareness, but, like, physical awareness for your body to just, like, know what to do.
Yeah. Like you're not pissing yourself as you go.
That would be a sight, just to watch a stream as
and not
you
peeing on people. You're like, sorry, I peed during this performance. I won't do it again.
Local wonder pees on crowd as she flies through the air.
Oops. Sorry.
Oh, man.
So she didn't break any bones.
Just insane.
Yeah, but she was too injured to perform the next day, and there was decent press covering that accident as her act was highly publicized already. And because she was so young, this gave additional attention to the matter.
Yeah.
So following that incident at the Portsmouth Aquarium, Ernst, her dad, goes to the office of this periodical called The Truth, or it was called Truth. It was a publication known for exposing kind of fraud and more of like its exposés. Mm-hmm. And they had published some concerns about the young performer, Zazzle, and her well-being, and wrote something along the lines of, someone should, quote, interfere. And kind of like, where are her parents? You know, like who the fuck is, who's watching her?
Yeah. It's like, this seems so wildly dangerous. Why is a child doing this?
Yeah, they were like, someone should really interfere with this shit. Like, who's watching? Who's helping? No one's offering, like, some sage advice for her that she doesn't have to fucking shoot out of a cannon.
Yeah. Why isn't someone being like, let's have her stop?
Yeah. So Ernst speaks to a writer at The Truth on how he could go about preventing such further happenings, and like from a legal standpoint.
What?
And he kind of explains, like, he goes to that paper that wrote that article and is like, this is what happened. This is how that contract went down.
So he's trying to like make it seem like it's not a weird thing what he's doing.
Well, Ernst goes to that paper and is like, this is how that contract, I kind of got swindled by this guy. And he explains the whole like,
oh, the dad. Okay, mm-hmm, I understand. Yeah. The dad is like, I'm legally obligated to let my daughter be shot through a cannon because this son of a bitch tricked
me. Yeah, because this guy tricked me. And he was just like, I really want to help her.
Have her stop.
I feel like, I don't know how. And he says that, quote, the newspapers say that someone ought to interfere to hinder her from risking her life for money. I'm her father and I want to interfere. And then he explains, like, quote, when the cannon is fired off, her limbs have to be rigid. If by mistake it is fired one moment too soon, she might be killed. When she takes her dive, if she did not fall lightly, she would break a limb. And if the net underneath is rotten, as it was in Portsmouth, she might be killed. The reporter admits to Ernst that he doesn't really know much about the law, but that Ernst, the dad, should speak to a magistrate and ask how to file an injunction against Farini. Because when Ernst tells the Truth reporter what went down, the Truth reporter's like, that's gotta be illegal. Like, I'm pretty sure that's illegal somehow.
Yeah.
He's like, and the reporter's like, I don't know about the law or anything, but you should talk to somebody because it sounds illegal.
It does sound very illegal. And fun fact for those listeners at home, a magistrate is a wizard judge.
He knows all the stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Essentially Dumbledore is the magistrate.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I believe you. Mm-hmm. So
if he does find it unlawful, he will magic it away.
Magically straight it away.
He magically changes the contract to, you're a bad boy, Mr. His name was Finkel, because I can't remember the mustache man's
Farini.
Name. Farini, there we go.
Finkel.
Mr. Farini, I'm going to magic this contract right away. And your money.
Yeah, so he says, you should ask a magistrate how to file an injunction. And Ernst admits to not even knowing what an injunction is. He's like, I don't even know what that is. So I don't know what an injunction is either, so I agree with you.
What is that, a traffic jam? No, it sounds like a legal thing. And that is only from context clues.
The context clue tells me that it's basically like, you can't do that. Stop doing that.
Yeah, it sounds like you don't want to get one.
Yeah, I don't. I don't want to get an injunction.
No one junked me.
Yeah, I don't want to get junked, injunked.
None of that. None of that J-junk.
No. The Truth reporter says that the justice system should at least, quote, prevent girls and children from risking their limbs in order that, with or without the consent of their parents, their taskmasters may deserve profit. So the reporter basically like, there should be a law that prevents young people from hurting themselves.
Unless it's a dude, break yourself in that cannon, my guy. You can do that all you want. Women and children, though, we don't want you to break anything. We care about you.
Yeah. if you're a woman or a child, then
yeah, maybe you shouldn't go into a metal tube and be shot out of it. I don't know. Guys, though, shatter them bones, baby.
Go for it. Jump in there.
There should be just a general no people getting shot out of tubes rule. Or at least after, like, at a certain age. At a certain age, you can choose to be shot out of a tube because this is America. But until that age, when you're a child, you shouldn't be able to do it.
Well, this is London, so
we're... Oh, well, no one's allowed out of tubes. There's no freedom.
We're dealing with magic police. Yeah, dealing
with Dumbledore. This is a different... These are different rules.
And junks.
No wonder I don't know what a juncture is. This is all in Hogwarts, so I don't know
what's going on. In Hogwarts, so it's different. It's totally different. So, in fact, Zazzle had suffered a series of accidents, and following her fall in Portsmouth, the public and press respond further.
I mean, because they love Zazzle.
I mean, they do. They do love Zazzle.
So, like, we want safety for Zazzle.
Safety for Zazzle. So, in an article from May in this paper called The Citizen, they say, and quote, if the public demands such sickening exhibitions and the law and the licensors permit them with the proviso of a precaution implied in the net, then most certainly
proviso is a spell.
Yes. Proviso.
it just adds like salt to something. It's a very simple, good spell.
Okay. With the proviso of a precaution implied in the net, then most certainly it is bound duty of those in authority to see that the precaution is a reality and not a farce. These children who are reared on excitement and fed on applause have a claim to our protection, end quote. So the writer makes it a point to note also that the performer is both a female and a child. So they're basically like, if they're going to do a performance that's crazy and dangerous, they have to make it safe. They can't. Yes.
And, you know, it's wild that someone had to like say that. It's one of those things that you'd be like, Yeah. I think that if this child is doing this thing, the thing that the child is doing should be safe.
Yeah. And like, you can't put a net there just so it looks safe. It has to really be safe, not pretend safe.
Waluigi is like, wow, there's a net there. Come on, guys.
Yeah. But there's a net. It looks safe. And he's
wow, there's a net.
I'm Waluigi. Oh, my mustache is so long.
My mustache is so long. It goes up and then it goes down.
So in December of that same year, 1879, Zazzle suffers from yet another fall while performing trapeze in Chatham, Kent.
Oh, Zazzle.
So she missed her hold and falls a considerable height.
Did she break anything this time? Do we know?
Well, she falls onto the accident net placed beneath her, but she slips from that net. And she's taken up and seems conscious, but she basically, and this is reported that she yells, I'm killed, I'm killed, when she falls.
Oh, no!
And then they take her away and she just looks like, all obviously in pain. And just,
I mean, I hope I yell that when I die in a glorious way.
Yeah, she just looks super bewildered. Mm-hmm. And then 30 minutes later, they have her come back. Her hands are all bandaged.
And like, she's gonna do it again.
And then they have her finish it.
Oh, no.
But she's like super nervous the whole time.
Of course. She just yelled, I'm killed. And then they're like, you get back in that tube, you prodigy.
Yeah. So then she finishes this trapeze act that she was doing.
Oh, my God.
They're just like, but she looked super nervous.
This time with no hands, like with a concussion and no hands, she has to do the same thing. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
Even after that paper yelled at them.
So she just keeps falling, and she seems very resilient, though. Her body's just like...
She must be. I mean,
she's falling hundreds of feet. Well, not hundreds of feet, but close to, like, often.
And only breaking her hands, like... That's pretty good.
I mean, they were bandaged up, but she finished a trapeze act, which is with your hands. Like, she's holding the bar.
How?
With her hands, swinging. I don't know.
They tied her hands to the thing. So she's like, well, you can't let go. You can't get hurt this way.
So with this other accident, this prompts even more questions about child safety and performing arts. Mm-hmm. So a writer from...
Does this lead to child labor laws?
No. Wouldn't that be cool, though? That'd be neat. Something similar, but... So with another accident, this paper called The Graphic, it's a weekly illustrated paper in Britain.
It's the cool paper. We're The Graphic.
They are super graphic. They demand to know, when will the Home Secretary be made to see the necessity of putting some restraints upon the suicidal, sensational, acrobatic feats, which are now, to our shame, be it said, so popular.
Who's the Home Secretary? Like McGonagall?
Kind of, yeah.
Or is that, I can't imagine the whole, because secretary sounds like a lower position. So I don't know why they're waiting for them to see, but because it's the Home Secretary, is that like, this is a bigger deal?
The Home Secretary is Her Majesty's Principal Secretary of State at the Home Department.
Oh, okay. So yeah, well, when you add of state, it makes secretary a way bigger deal.
And at that time, the sitting Home Secretary was Richard Ashton-Cross. Which sounds familiar.
Yeah. To me. It sounds like an important name.
I'm like, I've heard of it. Yeah. I've heard that name, I think. So it's alleged that Cross told the Westminster Aquarium's manager this guy, Wybrow Robertson.
Wybrow?
Wybrow. Wybrow.
I gotta wonder what his eyebrows look like.
Wybrow eyebrows.
Are they big or are they in the shape of Y's?
Wouldn't that be just question marks? Also.
Question mark eyebrows? They're like, how did your eyebrows go up? How does that work for you? And he's like, Wybrow? He never answers it. And he sounds like Jerry Seinfeld. Wybrow?
So Cross told the aquarium's manager that he would be accountable should an accident befall Zazzle.
Look, if again. She breaks her arm, I'll break my arm. And then we'll keep going. That's only fair. You're like, well, if this adult does it.
So Robertson, the manager, invites Cross, the home secretary, the secretary of state, to be fired out of the cannon himself.
Yes! That's the kind of ridiculous, like, justice I want. That's amazing. Oh, my
what,
God.
What a fucking crazy manager. He's like, why don't you try it? Try it for yourself.
That's amazing. That should always be the metric. That should always be it. You're like, oh, you dumb factory. You think this sludge is safe? You drink it.
It's so crazy. So more attention's put towards Zazzle's parents. Why aren't they stepping in despite Ernst's vocal presence in the press about how he wants to remove his daughter from the act? His separation from his wife and his daughter left him really with little say in his family happenings. Susanna, on the other hand, appears perfectly content with the life that her daughter's living, regardless of the series of injuries her daughter continues to sustain. And because Zazzle's living with her mother...
She's tough. Let her go.
Yeah, pretty much. And her mom kind of has a final word. She's only 16. Mm-hmm. Despite the lack of safety interest for her daughter, the public interest doesn't die down.
It is weird that the mom... Like, I don't blame the mom for wanting to be like, she's amazing at this. Like, this is what she should do. But, like, it is weird that the mom is not like, why can't we also make it safer? Like, you know what I mean? It seems like she doesn't have to stop doing it. Just, like, let's get, like, a second net under the first net. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, let's get some other shit.
Let's put some mattresses underneath that net.
Yeah. Like, it just seems like there's, like, a lot of simple things they could do. And, you know, maybe it wouldn't, like, make it the most safe thing. But, like, you can make it safer. And
agreed.
She can still do it. It just seems weird that the mom is like... the circus is dangerous. Why?
Yeah, yeah. One journalist compared it to matadors and bullfighting. Basically, it was like matadors are skilled and they have experience, and we all watch them do this.
We give them a big cape. Like, what else do you want?
But he's like, but if we put like a child in there and still paid for this performance and watched it, like people would freak out. They would never allow it. You know.
I mean, we'd hope.
I hope so. I hope so too. Yeah. So he compared this to that. It was basically like, she's a child and we're all paying to see her just put her life on the line every day and it's fine.
Twice a day,
right. And just watch her leap and maybe die every time.
And then crash and then do it again.
Yeah, and be like, and she's okay, it's fine.
Yeah, she's okay. And they're like, get back in there too.
So the public pressure was so great that by February of 1880, the Acrobats and Gymnasts Bill was presented to the House of Commons.
Oh, that's a fun bill.
Yeah, the bill called for immediate attention to, quote, prevention at exhibitions and public amusement of acrobatic feats dangerous to life, end quote. There was concern, though, that this was too much of a gray area, the statement, this bill.
Oh, that it was just like concerns to your life. So it's like who concerns and, you know.
Yeah, and that it was like that ordinary gymnastics and acrobatics could be prevented and lumped into this because it was like, what is dangerous acrobatic
feats?
Yeah,
what counts for dangers and who, like, you know, what's dangerous for different people?
Right, and they're like, well, there's so much performance that is like that. So is everybody going to stop performing? Like,
yeah, can you just shut someone down if something looks dangerous?
Yeah, like, so people started to panic, and this one representative was like, basically, this is for Zazzle. This is for this person that performs the iron jaw and lifts three men with her mouth. This is for this hair hang performance. This is for like these five people that are really...
That are doing like
constantly,
the extraordinary
Yeah, and
versions.
Constantly injuring themselves or putting themselves in harm's way. And that is who this is for. But it's so hard to define that moving forward. You know, you can't just be like, these five people, you can't do it, you know? So this was kind of bounced back and forth in the House of Commons. The bill was carried forward for further discussion in the following parliament, although it was hard to constitute what was too dangerous a feat and where to place rules and regulations. So it was kind of just stagnant for the moment, but they were still discussing it. So realizing she truly is putting her life on the line and becoming more confident in her business dealings, Zazzle begins to ask for more money, fucking as she should.
Finally, Zazzle, get that money.
Yeah, right? So in response, Farini just says no. Like
he's like, what? Now you want more money just because you're endangering yourself twice a day? Kids these days.
And he secretly begins training additional young women to perform as Zazzle replacements.
Oh, yeah. He's like, Zazzle's getting too smart and she also might die. So I need a backup.
So it's reported that he had up to 4 Zazzles waiting in the wings, ready to replace her in surrounding local suburbs around the area. 4.
This fucking Waluigi son of a bitch. I hate him.
He's a piece of shit.
He is.
So on top of her daily death-defying acts and sticking out her neck, she was like inadvertently given the role of being a focus of figure and femininity, a subject of the male gaze, whether she knew it or not or wanted it or not.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, she was also in some ways a positive and strong role for females at the same time. So according to historians, circus performers like Zazzle challenged stereotypes of femininity through acts that demonstrated an unabashed feat of strength and agility when she would perform these crazy acts. Like with all of them, she would do that trapeze and tight wire and then blast out of this cannon.
I mean, you got to be very strong and brave and like physically adept to do all those things or you'd be dead. Like
so strong. 100%. And then constantly falling and bouncing back and being fine.
She's basically an action hero. Like
she is. Yeah. But physically so she is. At the end of the show, it's argued that this canon spectacle served not only to provide a powerful conclusion to the show, but also to balance her other acts like the tight wire and trapeze that were just as lovely and graceful visually. But the canon was more a physical display of athleticism. However, but it paired with a more feminized, relatively passive helplessness. So it was like this beautiful lady shot from this monstrous cannon. So it balanced. It was all balanced. So the trapeze is like this really strong thing, but she's moving gracefully. The tight wire is like this really, you know, agile, strong feat. But she's like has a little dainty umbrella and she's doing these slides, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's so like... Gender norms are so strange that, like, for someone to do such an amazing physical task, like, the way that people have to be okay with it if she has a little umbrella, like, that's so, it's so absurd. I mean, like, I get it just because we live in it, but, like, just from, like taking a step back from that, that is so fucking ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. They're like,
you're doing this amazing thing, but here, have this pink umbrella so people know you're a lady. It's just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Crazy because a lot of tight wire acts would hold like a stick to balance. Yeah,
makes sense.
They would hold that big stick. It was kind of impressive that one, she didn't hold that thing for balance, but her balance was like a parasol. And that added that feminine thing for her as well.
Does it help at all with balance or is it simply a prop?
Mm-hmm.
It does. Okay.
It does help with balance. Yeah.
Interesting.
It does. And it is a prop, but yes, it does help with balance. Despite her younger age, Zazzle was also sexualized in advertising materials from the time of her earliest Zazzle performances. So she was like 14 and they're still
really?
Like...
Oh, geez. Yeah.
This one paper, the Illustrated Sporting and Dramatic News, explained that women may appreciate her athleticism. It's also provided several descriptions of her, quote, most perfect figure. Some have speculated that looking at the advertising materials, some of the acts of appeal may have been because in order to fit in the canon, she had to shed most of her Victorian clothing, i.e. like this is a cool act because she shot out of a cannon, but she's also like in her underwear. Like, so guys are like,
hell yeah. Put that babe in the cannon, dude.
Yeah. So
that evil mastermind, Waluigi.
Waluigi. So this painter, George Frederick Watts, asserted that she was both the bravest woman I ever saw and that her form was the most perfect he ever
and
saw.
And she's hot as hell, dude.
Yeah, she's hot as hell. So when Watts asked her to sit for a portrait, her sister came along as a chaperone.
Because she is, you know, 14.
She's smart. She's not, and she's like, oh, cool, I'm going to bring somebody.
Yeah, he's like, I would like an adult, please.
Yeah, yeah. Zazzle's like, cool, well, my friend, my sister's going to come because you're scary.
Because you're a creepy old man.
So Zazzle told another paper, The Bystander, that at some point she asked her manager, likely Farini, whether she should donate Watts's portrait to the National Portrait Gallery. Because she's a nice lady and was probably like, well, I should donate this. And I'm kind of famous and, you know, maybe they want it. Mm-hmm. And he just laughed and said, whatever would they want in the National Gallery with a picture of you? Like, what a piece of shit.
What a dick. It's just like, he
sucks. He just negs her and is just like,
he's like, yeah, you amazing, like gravity defying human being. You're nothing.
Yeah. It sucks. And
well, because like honestly, like all she has, I mean, you know, if this guy truly is the only one with a canon, whatever, but like she doesn't need the canon to make a great living, you know what I mean? Like, she does not need this guy, and he can't have her realize that, because which is also like, if he just wasn't an asshole, like they could have a great business relationship,
right? And it's interesting, like if we want to get into the psychology of things, you know, her dad is not around.
Yeah.
You know, she's with this guy who, since she was like 13. So this is like, I mean, again, I don't know. I wasn't there. But this is like the paternal figure, I guess, for her. Yeah. I mean, starting at 12 or 13 till now. So she probably just wants to get his approval in some fashion.
I'm sure.
So for her to leave was probably out of the question for her. Until she gets smart enough.
Yeah, exactly. And she's enjoying herself, you know? Like, she likes what she's doing. But she's also a child who probably doesn't realize the, like, scope of how much he's, like, fucking her over.
Yeah, until just now. Where she's like, oh, wait. So many articles are saying these things.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying you're being a huge dick. Maybe you're being a huge dick.
Yeah, all these papers. The whole world, actually.
And he's like, no, I'm not. In fact, you're bad for asking me.
How dare you even say that? So with all this pressure, both physically, mentally, even politically, as she was still a subject of discussion in Parliament, Zazzle is truly like at her wit's end and fed up with the small share of money she's receiving from Farini. Yeah.
As she should be.
She's, after all, she's the star of the act. And she took all the physical risks.
Yeah, it's all her. This fucker invents a spring and then she gets all the money.
But the show and the name were his, technically. I mean,
yeah, that's that bullshit.
And Farini would make it known he would continue to act like a bulldog. He would publish these postings in the paper that would say Zazzle owned and created by Farini. And it would like be these billings in the paper and just be like, he was simply selling the act or usage to circuses just so everybody knew he owns it.
Hey, this is mine. My name's on it.
Yeah, this is mine. Yeah, and it'd be like, the usage, I'm selling the usage. And it was like this detailed thing about how he sells the usage, but he owns it. He owns Zazzle. He owns the Zazzle Act. He owns the Human Cannonball Act.
That's some like that real exploitative bullshit of the, it's like, yeah, you know how this other person is doing all the work? It's like, yeah, but I own the work they do. So I should get all the money. It's like, can you fuck off? That kind of stuff is so gross. And it still happens a lot.
Yeah. It was like in multiple, it was just so weird. And it was like an ad almost. It's like, just so everybody knows, like, so the other circuses know and other managers know, like, just so there's no confusion.
Yeah, it's like, don't forget about me. I'm here. I am the guy.
So she felt stifled and she really wanted out. So it's around this time, because it's 1880, P.T. Barnum hears about her. So and according to P.T. Barnum, who had traveled to London to see her performance, Zazzle pleaded with him to take her away. She pleaded with Barnum to take her.
Well, of course, Barnum says this.
Yeah.
It might be true, but even whether
I kind of believe it.
I mean, she definitely wants to leave, but like, PT would say that whether she was just like, hey, do you need another act? He's probably like, she pleaded with me.
She couldn't stop talking to me. So, and Barnum loved her act and was more than willing to take her to the States and showcase this thrilling new showstopper because he had to counter that new baby elephant, remember?
Oh yeah, he did.
Yeah, so he was just like,
Well, so it is interesting that PT is like, so Dumbo also came, or not Dumbo, Jumbo came from, which now I'm realizing that's probably why Dumbo's name was Dumbo.
Yeah. Well, so what happened was he had, you know, Bailey had that electric light. And so then he was like, I have to have something. So then he gets the Zazzle act, and then I have that baby elephant, and then he was just like, oh, fuck, okay.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that Jumbo was born in the States, because I was thinking that, like, both of them came from
Jumbo did Europe. Come from London also.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, Jumbo came from London later in a couple of years.
But then
later.
There was another elephant. And then the baby elephant.
The baby elephant was Bailey's, yeah. And was born in America. That was baby Columbia. Little baby Columbia, the cutest baby elephant. Yeah. And then PT was like, fuck, I can't. All right, let's merge. Yeah, like,
God damn it.
But, hopefully you all listened to that episode.
Yeah, so you know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah. If not, sorry. Go to episode 2.
I mean, there's a baby elephant in it. Why wouldn't you want to listen to it?
I mean... You're foolish. Come on. You're foolish if you don't.
Yeah. And a lot of elephant facts.
And so about elephant teeth. Oh, my God.
Yeah. They have them. Figure out how.
And where.
And where. The answer would surprise you.
So Zazzle pleads with Barnum to take her away. He loves her act. He was like, all right, let's do it. So there's continued pressure from Parliament about acrobatic safety and the pending laws that could impede future work. So Farini's like, I better strike a deal with Barnum, too. Yeah. So he does. So these two little slick willies have a little discussion.
Them and their mustaches have a talk.
Yeah. Farini's like, it's my machine. It's, you know, it's my cannon.
Yeah. If you want the cannon, you got to pay me.
Yeah. That was like an easy bargaining chip for him. So they strike up a deal. Mm-hmm. And Farini gets a spot in Barnum's circus for the next season. And he's listed in their show notes as a cannoneer.
Even though he doesn't go in it or do anything.
He's like, I work the cannon.
I tighten the screws.
Yeah. I say, I release this latch and then she goes out.
Yeah, I'm the spring guy, right? You can't add a cannon without the springs.
I pull this lever out and I let it go like a pinball machine.
Yeah, I pull the crank and then she goes flying up and around the pinball machine. But you got to have the crank guy. Not everyone can do that.
The balls don't go if you don't pull it back.
I've been saying that since I was a kid.
So despite this rising tension between Zazzle and Farini concerning the amount she was paid, they both traveled to the U.S. for this season. And the two of them, along with the cannon and its machinery, would join P.T. Barnum's new growing circus in their 1880 season. The rate that she was paid is rumored to be 50 pounds a day for her act, which is $1,700.
That's much better than what she was getting.
I'm hoping that she was paid separately than the cannoneer. And
and it wasn't all going to him and then him giving her a cut kind of deal.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping so. There wasn't any note of otherwise, but I'm hoping that's the case. There was another documentation of what she was paid, and it's in this book called Sawdust and Gold Dust. It said that Zazzle was earning $500 a week on Barnum's show, which is like $12,000 a week in today's money.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad amount of money, but I do feel like for what she was doing, it still should have been more.
Yeah. Still, both are way better than $100 that she was getting before.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an improvement.
She debuts in April. This is an article from the New York Clipper about her debut performance. The performance terminated with the daring feats by Zazzle, who made her American debut, being assisted by Farini, her instructor, and the inventor of the apparatus used. Ascending to nearly the roof of the building, she walked upon a small wire stretched across the entire auditorium, using during her first passage a Japanese umbrella, but descending it during her return. She next ascended to a trapeze and performed a number of difficult feats, then mounted to a stationary platform from which she dove downward headfirst and alighted in a net placed below. She then mounted to an elevated platform beneath which was suspended in the air by means of wire ropes, a large mortar, which she entered feet first and was speedily lost to view. Farini, standing on the net beneath and holding in his hand a long wax light, asked if she was ready, and receiving an affirmative reply, applied the torch to the mortar, which was discharged with a loud report. Zazzle was seen to pass through the air and fell uninjured in the net on the opposite side of the auditorium. The building is not well adapted to display the feat to its best advantage, as there are so many obstructions hanging down from the roof. The act was in every way successful and received fervent applause. During the evening, Mr. Barnum appeared in the arena and briefly addressed the audience, who became quite enthusiastic. So
was a hit.
Yeah, she did all that shit. does a tight wire, does a fucking trapeze, does her high dive, and then she gets shot out of a cannon.
Like, she's a fucking one-woman show. Like, you don't need the rest of the circus. Like, you know what I mean?
She's radical. So, I mean, and no shit, Barnum's like, please, yes, come with
me. Yeah, it's like, come, yeah, yeah.
So Barnum had found his newest daredevil craze as she combined femininity, skill, and strength, proving to be an entertainment sensation in the States. And the great success of this human cannonball act bred many imposters as a result. Zazzles were making appearances in other shows, and it's unclear to what extent that there were other Zazzles, but it was enough for her to start to bill herself as the original Zazzle. The stream of imitations came to a head when one woman appeared in an obituary in the New York Clipper, which was identified as Zazzle. And she was like, she called that paper and was like, I'm fine. I'm alive.
Yeah, I'm alive. I don't know who that person is. Like, we don't know either. Her face smashed into a wall.
Yeah, so you keep getting hurt, and so does she.
Like, well, that also implies that other people are fucking making cannons, so they really don't need that piece of shit.
Right, because once Farini started to do his cannon, people were like, oh, I can make that. I'm sure.
I was like, oh, a giant spring? We can get
that. They're probably like, I'm going to make that. So, and people did start making them, and they did start popping out of all over the place.
I bet.
And Adam Forepaugh is one of, you know, because he and Barnum had such a rivalry. He was like getting Zazzles, basically, for his show later on in the 80s.
It seemed like that was the trend. Like when one big thing would come in, the other like circuses were just like, oh, fuck, now we need a baby elephant. Ah, oh, God damn it. We need a Zazzle. Like,
during this time, while Zazzle performed with the Barnum and Bailey Circus, she met George Oscar Starr, a press agent for P.T. Barnum. She returned to Europe November 1881, newly engaged to George Oscar Starr. And for a stretch, she performed in the Inner Ocean Show back in Europe. I couldn't find much on this show, but it sounds really fun. Inter-ocean show. I'm like, wow. I don't know,
she shot over the entire ocean.
It was a gentleman's circus, this guy, John O, in his inter-ocean show. But,
oh, I see.
But she was there for a couple months. But it sounds amazing. I couldn't find much on the show. There's a lot of circuses that were just there for truly like a year or however long. And this could have been one of them.
Yeah, I got to imagine it's a very difficult thing to keep a circus going year after year after year. I mean, there's just so many people to organize and so many safety things and like, you know, location you need to. Just
money, right? Yeah. It's like a production and you're like, can we keep doing this forever? Yeah. Or just this season? Cool. So, of course, Farini follows this engaged couple back to Europe. Fucking weirdo.
Like the true asshole villain he is.
So after finishing her tour with the Inner Ocean Show, she and George Starr would marry. They took some time off because they just got married. And then they would return back to Barnum Circus in the 1882 season. And, of course, fucking Farini goes back to Barnum Circus.
Oy vey.
What a weirdo.
Yeah, well, he knows that he has nothing without her. Like, other cannons are popping up, other Zazzles are popping up. Without her, he has nothing. And if he hasn't been saving this cash, he's out of luck.
You're exactly right, because now it's like he doesn't have the one thing. It's happening now. It's spreading now. People have figured out how to do it on their own. So he's not the go-to guy for
this
thing.
He's got nothing.
Yeah, so he needs to, like, stick with her. So he is on Barnum's show, and now he has the additional title of lecturer. So I don't know if he's talking about like his world travels or what, but that, I mean,
he must be making up shit. I mean, it's like,
I bet you him and Barnum really.
Yeah, Barnum's like, look, my guy, I know, I've like, I get you. Well, I'll help you out.
I got you a spot. I got you.
Yeah, I'll let you say some bullshit for a little bit before the in-between act breaks.
I know how you love talking. I love talking too.
Yeah.
We got it.
I see you, my dude. We're going to work this out.
So Zazzle and new hubs, George Starr, were probably like,
that new husband?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
her new hubby. They took a break after that 1882 season and decided to look into different entertainment. Because they were like, we got to get away from this guy, Farini, probably.
Yeah, this guy's freaking haunting us. We have to go somewhere else.
So they decided to look into different entertainment endeavors. and just like outside of the circus, which
makes sense because honestly, she could probably do an entire show herself. You just rent, you know, some equipment and like a theater. She's gonna be fine. You know?
Yeah, and Star, her husband, was a press agent.
So he drums up the a match made. That's a power couple, right?
I know.
There.
So he starts working for other venues that are not circus. He's just like, I'll just do other theaters, like and. Do press and for anything else. Like, it's fine.
We will get the best possible one-woman show of all time going.
And he's just, like, advertising for this show and that show and whatever. And so they just make money doing that for the next 3 years. And in 1886, the two decide to launch an opera company, and they call it Star Opera Company because she has a really good voice also.
Of course she does, because she can do fucking everything.
And she, when she would do Tight Wire, she would sing also. And people were she's fucking amazing.
She just shot out of a cannon.
Yeah, she's like brilliant. She's incredible.
She goes back down. As she literally in height rises, she goes in higher notes. And then as she goes down, like...
Yeah, she was like brilliant.
Jesus. She does Carmen while she's flying through the air. Like, that's so fucking right? crazy.
And they wanted this opera company to be accessible to a popular audience. They would do like a variety of different kinds of shows, a lot of comedic operas. And these operas gave her, Zsa, like a chance to utilize her singing voice and scratch her performance itch. Mm-hmm. And she would play various comedic roles in these operas.
So in those operas, she wasn't necessarily doing like great physical feats. It was like an actual like a play opera kind
of
thing.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So she's just like, all right, Farini's gone. Let's do this.
Yeah, she's like, I'm 18. I'm getting a little old to be shot out of a can.
Yeah. Yeah, I think 1886, she's like 23 now.
God damn. She's done such crazy, crazy, amazing shit in like her life. And she's only 23 at this point. And she's like still like, she's like, yeah, I'll be an opera star now.
Right? That's crazy. So George Starr, this is my fun facts about George Starr. Just a little background on him.
His body is star shaped.
He's born in the same town as Barnum. Mm-hmm. He was a doctor before he worked as a press agent.
Oh, really? He's like, you can't make any money being a doctor. It's all about the press.
At 21, he receives his diploma in medicine.
I was going to say clearly he must be very smart, but I do wonder, doctors back then, I feel like it was a lot of guessing. It was a lot of, it's like, put leeches on your butt. That'll suck all the flu out.
Well, we cut your foot off and that's not helping. So let's try the other one.
Here's some cocaine. Do a little bit and come back next week.
Yeah. Drink this liquid cocaine.
Yeah. It's like, how do you feel? Well, I feel good when I drink the cocaine. Keep drinking the cocaine.
Keep it up. It's obviously working.
All characters, when I don't know their voice, become Jerry Seinfeld. Drink the cocaine.
So he was a doctor, and that same year he became a doctor. He became second lieutenant in the New York National Guard.
Jesus, this guy. I mean, well, you know, honestly, if anyone was going to be right for Zsa, you need a dude with a lot of accomplishments because she crushed everything by the age of like 14. So this guy's got a lot to live up to.
But then he said he eventually caught the circus bug, so to speak, and he discovered that people would rather be amused than doctored, and that in fact amusement is the best prophylactic of disease, which I thought was very funny. And then he became a press agent and advance man from 78 to 80, and then took a break when he met Zazzle and they got married. So remember, James Bailey took a break from Barnum Circus.
He took a leave. He's like, I'm gonna have a vacay.
Yeah, for like 2 years. So when he came back after his 2 year rest, it's 1888, and he asks Star, because he really liked Star as a person. He's like, can you come back to the circus, to our circus, and be like a special rep? And I'm going to send you to Europe. Mm-hmm. And can you kind of source new talents and attractions for me? We're kind of trying to re-up our circus. I'm back. I'm refreshed. Mm-hmm. You're fucking great at your job. I know you are.
Yeah.
I know you guys are doing this opera thing, but can you come back and do this? And so he's like, okay, I'll do that. So while en route to England, while Star is traveling to England to look for these new talents and attractions on behalf of Bailey, Barnum's Bridgeport, Connecticut winter quarters is mostly destroyed in a fire.
What?
I didn't know this.
Another fire?
Yeah. So it's 1888.
Fucking A, this guy.
This guy's going to England to look for talent. And then he gets word that the Bridgeport, Connecticut winter quarters gets destroyed in a fire, which I thought for sure would never catch fire because it's like in Connecticut And it's this mm-hmm. giant campus, but no, it catches fire and all the menagerie is lost. All these animals.
Where was PT? Where?
He's building that house. He was building that last house, that marine, that freaking marina house. And then eventually he would die. But
everything he touches lights on fire. It's just insane.
So then they put Star in charge of finding all the new animals to replace this menagerie.
Yeah, sure.
Which he does. And he kills it and he replaces all their fucking burnt animals from this seventh fire. I don't know. It's like, it's like their fifth fire, though, really.
But five is a lot.
Yeah, five is a lot.
Two is a lot. Yeah. You know? One is a freak accident. Two is what's going on. This guy, oh my God.
So he's traveling to Europe to get like some new talent. And then they're like, oh, we had another fire.
Actually, could you get more talent?
Can you replace all of our animals?
How many ostriches can you get on a quick?
Yeah, super quick. And he does it. And so they're like, you did a bang up job. Can you keep doing this for us? And so he's like, fuck. Okay, fine.
He's like, I guess I'm the animal guy.
Yeah. Here. So he just keeps on doing it. So because he returned back to the circus, so does she. She's like, all right, fine. So, and he's also, in that same year, offered a position as managing director of Barnum & Bailey. And so she's like, all right, you're in it. So I will return to the circus.
Yeah, it's like a pretty easy, like, it was like, well, you're going to make a shit ton of money doing that. I could go back and just do my act. Like, we'll both crush it and like travel the world. Like,
yeah. And so she dips in and out of like, that circus. She's like 25. She continues to do her Leap for Life, mm-hmm. her Tight Wire, her Human Cannonball. And the Human Cannonball has infiltrated all these circuses all over, like you said.
Yeah.
During that same time between and falling into the later years between 1889 through 1891, she also begins using her expertise and experience to educate the public on public safety. So she starts working.
That's nice.
Yeah, she starts working with public safety workers about the usefulness and potential of safety nets.
My God, like, what a badass. Like, she's mm-hmm. so, like, she is literally the best at her job in her field across the world, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, just keeps upping it and upping it and upping it. She meets a dude who is, like, similarly very multi-talented. Like, she comes back and she's like, you know what? It's not enough that I'm an amazing performer. I'm also going to be, like, an advocate for public safety and, like, safety for circus performers. Like, what an all-star.
So she's like, you guys, we can use these nets for saving lives.
It's like, we have all these nets lying around. Why don't we put them under stuff?
Well, she goes to the fire department in mm-hmm. New York, and she's like, you should use these for people when buildings are on fire.
Yeah.
And, like, they should use these and they can jump into these.
Wait, did she start that whole thing? Because mm-hmm. like people, I mean, they don't use nets anymore. They use inflatables, like pads, but it's the right. same idea.
But yes, she did. Yeah, that was her.
Wow.
So she starts to work with the fire department and she starts doing these demonstrations where she's dressed in street clothes. So she has like a skirt mm-hmm. on and like a hat and jewelry. Yeah. And she does these like public demonstrations to illustrate how these nets could be used as a safety and life-saving device. So she started jumping out of like four-story Jeez. Buildings and all these firemen would hold these nets taut and she would mm-hmm. show them how to fall and just like fall on your butt. Like they tell you how to fall, but she would continually work with these fire departments and these safety organizations and be like, hey, this is useful, namely for burning buildings. And she...
Which I unfortunately are a big part of this of some circuses.
Sadly, yeah.
Yeah.
So she was like, you could use this for all the things, for everything. So she advocates for the use yeah. of nets as a lifesaver. And she brought up a number of issues for safety for those living in higher rise buildings, which were becoming more prevalent. And she just wanted to pass mm-hmm. on her knowledge just to the fellow man in general. And she received endless thanks and praise from the New York Fire Department just for her bravery yeah. and her advice. Isn't that nuts? That's so she crazy. Was just like, hey, use these nets.
She's too
people
good.
People jump into these, like normal people.
Yeah.
Not just me.
Yeah, like anyone's life could be saved by a net. That is really insane.
So she's why we jump into soft things.
She changed the world, basically. Like she's yeah. like had such yeah. a huge impact.
She uses the circus for good.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. She entertained us and made us safer, which what a checklist.
What a checklist. So the fall 1891, Zazzle's touring with Four Paws Circus, the rival of Barnum. But Barnum had passed in the April of that year. Okay. They're exhibiting in Las Vegas, New Mexico. I didn't even know there was a Las Vegas, New Mexico. I was like, what?
Me neither. Okay.
So it's an evening performance. And in addition to her Cannonball act, she's slated to perform her Tight Wire act. The wire in which she did her act was 40 feet above ground. And it's running side from the side of the tent to two poles braced together in an inverted V shape in the center. On the top of the poles was a platform where she would begin her walk. And the wire would, you know, connect to that platform. They were fastened together with a steel band to keep together the poles. Mm-hmm. But on this day, the steel band had been left off by mistake. So Zazzle, she signals to the rigging guys.
Oh, no.
And they think she's signaling to put the wire, that the wire is too loose and that they need to tighten it, that they need to tighten the slack.
Uh-oh.
So this is when shit goes down. So the unfastened poles that aren't braced together, they pull apart.
Yeah.
She's tossed off the platform up into the air.
With nothing.
With nothing, yeah, exactly. And she's shot to the ground. Jesus. The net's under the wire, but not under her platform, right? Because that's where the safety net is. She's in the platform area. God. So she strikes the ground on her.
But she's going to be totally fine and not break any bones, right?
Right, for sure.
Oh, really?
No. Well, so she strikes the ground. She's on her hands and knees. And then immediately after that, one of the huge support poles falls on her.
Oh, my God.
And crushes her back.
Oh, she needs that.
Yeah, she needs her back. So the crowd, for a moment, like, is freaking out. They're screaming. Women are fainting. And one witness says it's the most horrible accident he's ever witnessed. And he says he's seen a good
many. And I was at that last one with the big fire tent.
Yeah, he's seen a good many accidents in his day. So the poles are lifted, and they pick her up and carry her out. One of the men say
that it was... And then they shoot her out of a can again, right?
Oh, God. I know. They probably would if they could.
Yeah.
One of the men say that it was, like, impossible to bend her straight. First of all, don't do that.
Yeah, that's a bad medical practice.
Don't try to do that. Like,
oh, she's all tangled up like a pretzel. Bend her straight and send her to the morgue.
Turn her out. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Is there a doctor here? Or is like, I'm a doctor. Bend her straight.
Yeah. Is that a medical term, sir? I don't think so. But any movement, she screamed in agony with any movement. Yeah. So she had broken her back.
And, I mean, she must have.
Yeah. So she received local attention before she was taken to facilities in New York. She left the show and retreated to where she went to heal in New York. And the accident effectively retired her from circus. And she spent several months in a suspended full body cast.
I mean, back shit is so bad. Like, it just, everything's connected to your back. Like,
yeah.
And yeah, she needs that for all
she
that.
She needs her back. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, you needed just to walk around, and like, she's doing like the height of human athleticism.
So she's 28, I think, by now, which is gnarly. Yeah. And then she just has to stop.
That sucks. Like, and it's also like, that is like her entire existence. You know, it's like she's been doing this for probably as long as she can remember and has never done anything else. So it's like, how do you fucking adjust to like, it's like literally her job is being mobile. She is the most mobile person maybe on earth. And then she has to do no movement for, I don't know, like years.
A long time it took her to recover. It says several months in a suspended body cast, but her the rehab time was, I'm sure, years to be back to normal. So.
Oof. I mean, at least, like, you know, her husband can still like promote stuff, and she's not like, and like, they probably have enough money to be like take care of her and stuff. But that is just like, just as like a person who's like, you're the thing that makes you happiest. You just can
right and so young,
and
so.
Not only that, you have to do the opposite of it. You have to not move.
So she would continue to be outspoken about safety and safety nets for public life saving. And there's so much press. One, when she fell, there was just like so much press about like how amazing she was.
Yeah. And if there was just a bigger net, maybe she would have
been okay. And just, but there was just an outpour of just how brilliant she was as a person, how much she did for, you know, the community in general, and and her, all of her, you know, public life saving efforts were noted in a lot of these articles. Yeah. Her husband continued to work for Bailey, sourcing special attractions through Europe. And eventually he would act as general manager until 1905 when Bailey passed the circus to him when he passed away. Yeah, because he really entrusted him with the circus. So they really like got along. And then in 1906, he retired from the circus business and the two moved back to Europe and they lived in a home in Upper Norwood. And she remained there until and after her husband's death when he passed in 1915.
Well, of course she outlived him. She's tough as hell.
Yeah, right. And I think he was a little older than her. So she enjoyed her later years, often said to be playing roulette from time to time.
Yeah, why not? She loves a thrill.
Yeah. I mean, she would just continue to just speak about public safety and educating, mm-hmm. you know, cities and fire departments and doing demonstrations as much as she physically could.
Jesus.
Or at least talking to people about them. But yeah, her circus career and any physical stuff was like out the window. Yeah. But she was she continued to be a circus fixture and attend circuses, mm-hmm. of course, until her ending years. There's a 1934 interview at Monte Carlo, which every year they have, or most every year they have like kind of like an Oscars of the circus where it's like an annual.
That's cool.
It's by Princess Stephanie, who is the daughter of Grace Kelly.
Princess Stephanie?
Yeah, Grace Kelly married a prince in Monte Carlo.
That's great.
And her daughter, Princess Stephanie, just really likes the circus. And so mm-hmm. they have like, it's basically like in Monte Carlo, it's like the best of the best.
Yeah.
We'll do a whole episode on it. It's very interesting. Anyhow, so she's interviewed in 1934 while at Monte Carlo, and she gives her opinion of the legal interventions from the parliament when she was just about her safety when she was performing. And she says a lot of those interfering men in parliament started a committee about it and they passed a law forbidding me to do it. Oh, I was wretched. I loved it. They just no right to take away me living if I loved it. I was ambitious. I wanted to be great. You see, it was me art.
Is that how she talks? She's a pirate.
Yeah, she's a pirate. She's yeah. A pirate.
That's
she's
amazing.
She's British. I don't know.
Oh,
she,
God.
But she was basically like, I really wanted to do it. I don't think my safety was really in jeopardy. I mean, she was just like, they have no right to really step in, which I thought was interesting.
It is. I mean, and maybe at the end of the day, her mom just like knew, like was of the same ilk. So she's like, look, this is dangerous, but like, she's amazing. She'll be fine.
Yeah. And yeah. Maybe she was just like, she fell like
four it's crazy times too that like
bad.
To the outside, like, eye, it's like, it seems like the mother's being so irresponsible, but like, maybe she's just lucky, you know, like, there is but like, also maybe the mom was like, right? I don't know. It's like really hard to tell.
It is hard to tell.
Cause like, until the very end, like, even when she did have injuries, it was like never that serious. It was like, you know, take a couple days off and now you're back.
Right. I'm trying to see. Let's see. She died in December 1937, but this is the
set. So she lived a long time.
Yeah, she's 74. So
that's fucking great for that time period.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
And she has like the most dangerous life outside of going to war. Like,
I mean, the treachery, the first third of her life mm-hmm. was insane. But then the last two thirds was just like, just chilling. I mean, she was like doing great public service and mm-hmm. telling people. I mean, the fact that she was like, use a net. Jump into this thing or as opposed to just burning alive in your house is amazing.
It's just better. Like you this way, at least you won't burn alive.
This is,
you
know? I mean, it is pretty incredible though. It's like kind of, because if you don't have like a ladder or a fire escape,
mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, you can't just jump out. The concrete's going to crush
you. Yeah, if your doorknob's hot, you can't go out that way.
You can't do it because the backdraft.
Yeah, the backdraft. You know,
you can't open that door.
You know the rules.
The backdraft.
So mm-hmm. when she passed...
There's a whole movie about
She passed away December 1937. She passed away at Camberwell House Hospital in Peckham. And this house was listed as more of an asylum or hospital for paupers or those with no family, which I thought was really sad.
That's such a bummer.
And I don't think she and Star, her husband had any children or family.
Yeah.
Or maybe her family was just like real shitty or they just didn't get along or she just didn't have any. But I thought that was so sad. I like looked this hospital up and down and I was like, is that real? Is that really real? But
that's such a bummer because she's like, you know, in some of these stories, they're just like some of these people who make the most money make it because they like do some terrible things, regardless of how like actual talented they are. But she's like the real deal with talent. But she's also just sounds like a wonderful human being too. So it's such a bummer that she has a sad way to die.
I thought it was so sad. It broke my heart. And there was little press of her passing in general. It was like you couldn't find any death records on her, any obituaries. It was like so sad. I thought it was so sad. That was like,
because like what a life. It's like, write that up. Like, she's done so much for the public and like was such an amazing performer.
Yeah.
Like,
and so many journalists would speak about how talented she was, but also just how bright and intelligent she was.
Yeah.
I mean, this woman had her name printed on 7 foot tall lithographs, and she performed in the most legendary circuses in the world. So, yeah. And, you know, I thought this was great. Like, she's been listed as Zazzle the Daring, Zazzle the Graceful, Zazzle the Champion of the World, Zazzle the Only Lady Gymnast, Zazzle the Human Cannonball, and Zazzle the Wonder of the World. And I thought those were really good things to remember.
I mean, that's pretty sweet. And it's like, it's very cool that like in real life, in like a more modern time, there's someone who has not just one title. You know, you fucking watch Game of Thrones, like, I'm the Kingslayer, I'm the this, I'm the that. And it's like, she's the real fucking deal. She's the, like, what was the last one? Like, the Wonder of the World or some shit
Like
that?
It was Wonder of the World.
Fucking move over, Kingslayer.
Yeah, like, only she and Khaleesi have 8 titles.
Yeah, seriously. And she's a fucking real person, which is just wild.
Yeah, she's the Khaleesi of the Human Cannonball, or the Khaleesi of the circus. Yeah, she's she was a pioneer and a daredevil, a champion for the people. And she was like effortlessly still beating her own drum while doing it. She was just like, this is just what I do. So, and for all of those reasons, she's definitely a circus legend, I would say.
Of course. I mean, just such a bona fide badass.
Yeah. So that's Zazzle's story of being a badass, and one that's really changed the way that we safely exit a burning building also.
Which, thank God for her. And, you know, with a menace like PT out there, we really need these kind of advancements.
She knew we were checking our boilers.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was so hard to not just immediately text you and be like, there's another fire.
Yeah, of course there is. That son of a bitch. Oh, my God.
When I read that, I was like, are you fucking serious? Like,
it's too many times to be coincidence. You know, it's just too many.
And I can't. I have no words. I have no words about that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So Zazzle's a badass. And
yeah, she was. That is truly wild. What a life.
Yeah. What a crazy life.
She fucking crushes.
Yeah. The classic circus story.
She really gives Jumbo a run for his money. Yeah. The only circus performer as beloved as Jumbo, with a name to match.
Yeah. So that's the story of Zazzle. And
it's a good one.
It will still remind you to check your boilers.
Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, you do not go to sleep without checking those boilers.
Yeah, I think most every circus story will in some way remind us to check our boilers.
I mean, with the fucking ghost of PT looming around, you can't be too careful.
Even on his deathbed, he still manages to catch fire.
I'm going
to
loosen a little gauge a little bit. It's got the pressure getting a little hot. Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, man. That guy.
What a guy.
What a rascal.
Yeah, that's saying it lightly.
What a rascal. Man. Well, that between that mustache and that fire.
Yeah, I mean.
What a bunch.
What a bunch indeed. Yeah, those two were made for each other.
Oh, and also I need to include our social media, I guess.
Yeah, hit them with the gram.
Any photos that we reference will be posted on our social media on Instagram at circus.stories. And Mark, you can plug your social meds.
I mean, if you want, I'm on Twitter at Mark Renauden. I guess I should spell it because my name is a fucking mouthful. MarkRenauden. And I'm on Instagram as Monsters, the letter N, Things. Monsters and Things. So follow our things. If you like our things, follow our things.
Yeah, follow our things. Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe, baby. Hit that like button.
Tell them. Tell Mr. Apple. We love them.
Yeah. Send emails to Mr. Apple and say, put them at the top of the chart.
So check your boilers, and we'll be back next week with another exciting circus story.
Check your boilers, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next time.
Toodaloo.